At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Live from Liverpool, The Dark Paranormal, Season 21.
Hello everyone and welcome back once more to The Dark Paranormal Season 21 Episode 4. I can't believe how quickly this season is flying. I say that most seasons, but it is the genuine truth. When I'm doing these episodes, they do seem to just fly by. And that can only be a good thing, and I hope you're enjoying Season 21 so far. And today's episode features someone's journey through their supernatural life. Firstly, as always, thank you for all of the communication and feedback, especially regarding last week, where we entered some waters we didn't want to enter, which was literally none of our making, but we're going to put all that to bed, and we're moving forward with a fresh face, a new smile, and hopefully a terrified heart and mind. It's been a while since I've explained why the show The Dark Paranormal exists, and it's simply this, to remind us all that if we believe in the supernatural, we should be fearful of it. Yes, we can get the nice stories, the revisiting grandmas, etc., but you always have to take the black with the white. One can't exist without the other. I've used before the analogy of somebody in a workplace saying they were visited by the ghost of their dead dog, and everyone in there will say, "Ah." And someone in there may turn around and say, "Interestingly enough, on the same topic, using the same belief system, I was dragged out of bed by my hair and thrown down some stairs." No one's going to say, "Ah," and in fact, that person may be painted as slightly insane. But it's the exact same realm that both of those things took place in. And it's interesting how non-believers will seem to accept harmlessly those innocent ghost stories, yet turn a blind eye and give a cheeky, their insane wink to someone when something dark happens. So, this show is here to shine a light on that darkness and to make us rightfully terrified of the dark paranormal. I know I state this most episodes, but remember, our submission system is very fluid, and even though we're literally almost halfway through Season 21, if you have your own true paranormal experience that you'd wish to share with the show, it may well still find its way on to Season 21, even though we have each episode mapped out. Because even if your story isn't the required length for an episode of The Dark Paranormal, I can guarantee you we will at some point find it an audience to listen to your experience. One thing, especially over on Patreon, we've found is sharing isn't necessarily caring, but it definitely makes you feel less alone and more part of a community of understanding. And something which has blown my mind ever since we started Patreon or even receiving emails for the main show is just how powerful that understanding can be to people. I guess it must feel like some form of acceptance. And I can definitely see how that would help somebody going through these horrific things. However, horrific things is what we've signed up to when we do this podcast, when we listen to this podcast, because we all need reminding that we should be afraid. Now, speaking of signing up to podcasts, our Patreon is currently offering a week free trial at the highest tier. That means for one full week, you can gain access to early ad-free releases and, of course, access to not only Dark Bites, but the entire back catalogue. Dark Bites is a 30-minute per week show, 52 weeks of the year, where we look at the shorter experiences sent in by our listeners. And it's a much more laid-back approach. We've recently changed things, so I read the stories on the show for the first time. That's the first time I'm hearing the story myself. So you get nothing but my unfiltered, actual reaction. It's a much more laid-back approach to how we do the show, and much more conversational. And as I've mentioned numerous times, the greatest thing about the Patreon society and community is it's just that, a community. And I have no part in that other than being the person who started a Patreon. The Patreons themselves are genuinely a group of like-minded individuals who somehow, through no conversation, have managed to make that place into genuinely one of the most respectful, safe, and inclusive environments online to do with the paranormal. We have skeptics, we have believers, and we have people who are somewhere in between. It's a magnificent place to be, and from the heart, I would join that if I was an outsider and not the podcast host. Head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal, or click the link in the show notes, just like the following wonderful new team members have. Geraldine, Kareen Georges, Rachel Fellman, Edog1313, Lysana Anderson, Tegan, Luke Everin, Maddox Kullman, Unity at Last, Edgar, Ryan Innes, Miss Rosa, Ingrid, Out There Jay, Sophia, Joan Joy, Trudy, Andrew, Donna Priest, Getty Erska, Curse13, and Destiny. Thank you so much, guys, genuinely from the bottom of my heart. In this day and age where celebrities release a podcast and receive a million downloads on day one, it's wonderful to know there are people out there loyal to this community and willing to support that community through Patreon. So genuinely, my hat goes off to you all. And I know there are people out there who are just as big a fans of the show, but are not in the position to support the show. But that doesn't matter. You can spread word of the show. You can tell friends of the show. You can share posts of the show, or even just leave nice reviews. Even just hitting subscribe wherever you listen to the show is both very quick, free, and helps us massively. And I'm equally grateful for anything you guys can do to spread this show. So a big thank you to each and every one of you listening right now. And speaking of right now, it's time. Lower those lights. Make yourself comfortable. And most importantly, leave your disbelief at the door. As we listen to Summoned by the Dead. Hi Kev and the Dark Paranormal listeners. I hope this email finds you well. My name is Mr. E. I'm a chef from the Midlands, Tamworth to be precise, in England. I have, for a long time now, kept my stories to myself. I've told a few select people that I knew wouldn't laugh me out the room. But having listened to your podcast, the care and understanding that not only you, but the community, give to the submitters' experiences is wonderful. And it's really built up my confidence enough to lay down a few words. Obviously, the main goal here is that you will read these connected stories out, and it may help other people gain the confidence they need so they think their story isn't laughable. But ultimately, I think at the very least, if you read this and choose not to use it on the podcast, at least I know a like-minded person has read and understood these strange moments in time that I've lived through. So this is an early thank you. I'll start my experiences from between the ages of 4 and 7 years old. I believe, before life took its toll on me, that I was quite susceptible to paranormal phenomena. I distinctly remember sitting down, playing with my toys on my bedroom floor, and I'd notice strange shapes passing over my head. These shapes would slither across the top of my vision. But when I would try and lift my head to see them clearly, they would stop moving. Therefore, they would cease to be seen. Of course, that could be explained away through biological reasons, and maybe those reasons are the true source. However, between those ages of 4 and 7, those weren't the only things that led to my young mind believing I was seeing and hearing things that weren't obvious to the rest of my family. I would regularly see shadow shapes from the corner of my eye. I'd turn to look and see nothing, as I'm sure you've heard many times before. But just maybe the frequency of these things being spoken by thousands of people from all over the world lends a smidge of credibility to their accounts. I would hear my name being called from other rooms, mainly if I was upstairs. I would hear my name clearly. It was an assertive way in which it was spoken, as summoning. Naturally, I would think that either one of my parents were calling my name, because if it were my brother calling me like that, I would be less receptive to the authority in the voice that was calling me. But the thing is, at no point was it obvious to me that the voice actually belonged to either my mom or dad. Yes, I'm English, but I've always used the American mom instead of mum. I would of course still ask if they'd called me, and they would say no and the day would go on. But there is no denying that someone or something had beckoned me. This beckoning motif will make more sense further on into my stories. There would be many strange noises, shadows that stayed motionless at my bedroom door at night, only visible between the gap between the bottom of the wood and the carpet. I was never sure if it was the shadow of a person or a person-shaped thing. But there wasn't always a shadow there, which rules out any inanimate object like a banister, etc. So only on occasions would something or someone be casting its ominous shadow, letting me know that it was only the wooden door that kept me from it. Around the age of 7, I woke up one morning, and it must have been early as the light was filtering through the curtains, but it was that dull type that only early spring and summer mornings give, with the promise of a day of glorious sunshine ahead. I made my way to my parents' room to get in between them in bed, and something spooked me. I remember needing the comfort of them to calm me back down. Now, whether it was a nightmare or a noise or a shadowy shape, I can't be sure right now. But I do remember getting to my parents' bed and letting the feeling of safety calm me. The bed faced towards the window, and the window had orange curtains drawn right across. So the light that was coming in from that early morning sun was filtering through them and giving the whole room a sort of sepia tone effect. Everything was awash with dull browns and oranges. My mom slept on the left, nearest the door. My dad slept on the right, nearest the cupboard. As I lay there, my small body lost between the sheets, sheets designed to comfortably cover two fully grown adults, the feeling of contentment slowly let me feel at ease. Then I looked to my left, over my mum's shoulder towards the door. And there he stood, eyes wide and knowing. A boy, older than me but not yet a teenager. But he wasn't contemporary. The best way I would describe him was Victorian. As my eyes met his, the fear jolted through me like a bolt of lightning that manifested at the top of my skull, and coursed its way through my small body until it reached my toes. I froze, as you can imagine, like a deer in the headlights. But the idea of freezing applies further than being stuck to the spot. The fear made its way through me and seeped into my joints. My shoulders felt locked, my stomach squirmed and then fell silent and still, and my eyes were so focused, staring at this boy, they started to dry out and sting. Anyone else listening or reading that has seen a full-bodied apparition will well understand this. You have this sort of mental shutdown that starts affecting the motor skills you have, but the mind has lit up in every other sense of the word. The neurons are working overtime trying to desperately find an explanation for what you are witnessing. His eyes held no malice or harm or intent of any kind. His brow wasn't furrowed, his fists weren't clenched. The only thing I could tell from his body language and his eyes was a great sense of knowing. He knew I was going to turn to look at him, and he was waiting patiently for me to do so. He knew I would be afraid, and he knew it was only me that would see him. So what else does a 7-year-old do, scared witless, alone in a space locked between himself and a boy from the past? His parents asleep, and the fear so overwhelming that the obvious choice of waking up your guardians doesn't even enter your mind. Well, you throw the cover over your head, and you hope the mysterious boy that doesn't belong here goes away. The fear only ramped up in intensity when I threw myself into a world of claustrophobic bedsheets. Will he pull my protective quilt from me? Will he make his way to the foot of the bed and grab at my legs and feet? Or will he wait and bide his time, silently making his way closer and closer to me, ready to deepen my fear when I do finally remove myself from this protective quilt fort? All of these questions ran through my mind, making the time I spent beneath the lengthen out. It felt like a small forever, but it was probably around 3 or 4 minutes. After so much perceived time locked in my mind and racked with fear, I chose to face whatever had been cooked up for me in the empty space of my parents' bedroom. As I threw the quilt off me, the rush of blessed, clean, fresh air was wonderful. I instantly scanned the room, and my new friend, thankfully, was nowhere to be seen. He'd vanished, but my fear of the unknown was only just beginning.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Naturally, I told my parents what had happened, but of course, they didn't believe me. I think through a mixture of easing their son out of a panic and not wanting to believe that something from the past also occupied their bedroom. They soothed me with dismissive but loving words. Now I'll move on to when I was between 13 and 16 years of age. I've started this part at 13, not because there was any significant paranormal encounter at this age, but this is where my life started to take a different course. At 9 years of age, my dad left my mom. They got a divorce, and although they weren't exactly best friends after this, there was no real nasty battle for custody or an excessive bitter fallout. There was certainly heartbreak and turmoil, but life, as it does, found its way again, and each of them found other partners that made them much happier. However, when I was 13, my dad was diagnosed with cancer. Luckily enough, it was caught relatively early on, so the prognosis was rough but not unbeatable. He started his course of body-ravaging medicines, chemotherapy, and very quickly, this massive hulking figure with a quick temper and quick wit was starting to shrink each and every time I would see him. He was always a large man. He had very old sentiments of 3 meals a day is what keeps you healthy, and a lack of actual exercise, which meant he always maintained this happy bulk. When I was 14, he received the great news of all clear. The cancer had retreated, and we could all go back to normal life of 2 Christmases, one day at my mom's, the other on Boxing Day at my dad's. And the good food twice a week at my dad's and the dry fodder that my mum made every other day of the week. However, life, as I've so keenly found out, is never that straightforward nor forgiving. During the summer holidays of 2007, I got a broken, anguished phone call from my stepmom. My dad had collapsed on the kitchen floor, struck his head on the step that led up to the downstairs bathroom, and hadn't been breathing since he fell. Obviously, she'd called an ambulance before me, but by the time I'd walked my way across my hometown, the ambulance had only just arrived. I feel I need to add that my mum and stepdad were away on holiday, thinking that me and my brother in our teenage years could look after ourselves for a week, and they would have been right on any other occasion. The paramedics tried to revive him, but it was hopeless. He'd breathed his last breath, making a bloody cup of tea in his dressing gown and slippers. How tragically British. I'm explaining this in minor detail because I believe it's important for what's to follow. As I'm sure many people are aware, grief comes in many forms. However, the clinging darkness that colours all you are all you see, all you feel, is in my estimation, a universal symptom. So there I was, a 14-year-old fighting raging hormones and a sense of loss so huge that even sat here now, at 32, I still don't believe that loss has never fully shifted. I lost a sense of self, because I was becoming someone new. I just didn't know it. I began, once more, to take notice in things that I'd stopped taking notice of a number of years before. A knock somewhere. Is that my dad letting me know he's here with me? A bald head in a crowd, slipping away into the swarm of people. Is that him? I believe that when people are lower, confidence busted, sense of self lost, grief-stricken, empty, well, that's when they're more susceptible to influence from other places. After his death, there were a number of occurrences that I still hope were him, but one I believe was something else, using my broken mind to beckon me into terror. Once, I was falling asleep with my TV still playing, which was a pet hate of my dad's, and as I was dropping off, the sleep lapping at my consciousness, I felt a sharp force move my head on the pillow, jolting me from my early slumber. This was an unmistakable hand on my cheek, an ungraceful push to wake me up, just like he would have done, because he wasn't really that subtle. Another instance was from my brother, when he was falling asleep. He swears to this day that his hair was swept from his face and a kiss laid on his forehead. I suppose he'd been a good boy and turned his television off before getting some shut-eye. I was obsessed with the fact I could no longer remember my dad's voice. And when I say obsessed, I truly mean it. It's all I thought about for weeks. I beat myself up about it. What sort of shitty son can't remember their own dad's voice? The sense of guilt was just building and building. Until one night, during this maelstrom of obsession, I dreamt a dream I will never forget. In it, I was walking through a car boot sale, a sort of yard sale for any American listeners out there, with some friends of mine. I came across a stall that was selling very old synthesizers, all cables and shifting buttons and dials. Being 14/15 years old, I was a huge music nerd. When I had finished taking in the sights, I moved along to the other stalls and tried to catch up to my friends. But out of a dreamy, clear blue sky, a voice bellowed. It was my dad's. Not an approximation, his, unmistakably. He rambled on about nothing in particular, just gave me a taste of the lilt and soft Birmingham accent that us Tamworthians have. The sheer sense of relief I felt is something I don't believe I could genuinely put into words. Was that him relieving me of mental strain, letting me know that I wasn't a bad person? Or was that the magnificent human mind finding the cure to something it created in the first place? Well, I'll leave that question here. At around 15, I went to see my grandparents, my dad's parents. At the time, they were looking after a neighbour's dog for the day. A little friendly thing that was some mixture of a border terrier and something else. I had the obligatory cup of tea and a catch-up, and my nan told me she was proud of how well me and my brother were coping. I felt the sting in my eyes and a lump in my throat start to grow. I excused myself to go smoke a cigarette in the back garden. Nobody was willing to tell me off for smoking. After all, what do you say to the emotionally unstable teenager with burning rage fueled by grief? Not a lot. Not without causing more upset and pain, believe me. As I dragged deep on the cigarette, I let myself have a private cry. I looked up to the window of my grandparents' bedroom of their tiny three-bedroom council house, and I remember wishing to see the man that I missed so much. The man that had gifted me so much pain, wishing just to see his face and maybe ask him how I could get better. Out of the gloom behind the window pane, he materialized. Not full-bodied, but a sharp outline of him. Again, unmistakably him, There he was, maybe ebbing through some form of plane of existence, just enough to let me know that my request to have a glimpse of him had been heard loud and clear from the other side. Instead of reveling in the joy of the moment of seeing him, I was instantly scared. This now otherworldly spectre, just forming from nothing, be it my dad or not, had shot a bolt of fear right through me. So I looked away. I felt stupid for doing so, and I looked back up to see him. But he'd gone. I finished my cigarette, disposed of the butt sensibly, because my nan would have kicked my arse if I just stubbed it on the floor, and I went to open the back door back into the kitchen to resume life, wondering about what I'd just witnessed. But the mat on the floor in the threshold jumped towards me as though someone had kicked it, leaving the door. The door opened inwardly, so I am 100% sure the door could not knock the mat in the opposite direction. After witnessing that mat slide towards me in the opposite direction of my walking and the opposite direction of the door opening, the once friendly dog shot out of the living room and started barking furiously at me. And even with three other people trying to calm the dog down, that pooch simply would not stop. So what happened there? Had something or someone greeted me at the back door? And did the dog notice? Had they passed through me to leave the building? On my 16th birthday, I was allowed to host a party at my mom's house. I invited my closest friends and a love interest, and made sure each of them had plenty of alcohol. The party went like many others, daring each other to drink more, ridiculous chitter-chatter, terrible beige food and awkward silences between me and the love interest. A quick bit of background that will make sense moving forward for this last experience. When I was a lot younger, when my dad was still at home with my mom, me and him had a game we would play. I would ask him to go down the garden, a very long Victorian terrace-style garden that stretched on for what seemed like forever to a young adventurer like myself. And I'd beg him to hide somewhere and then wait for me to come and find him. However, there was a twist. I didn't want to just find him. He had to jump out and scare the life out of me. And I insisted this. It was my request. It was such a thrilling time walking through this jungle of a garden that stretched on forever past the creaking apple tree, the overgrown fruit bushes, and he would inevitably jump out from somewhere unknown, scare the life out of me, and we would both laugh. And I'd probably hug him, and then I'd beg to do it again. But he had to hide somewhere different, because the scare wasn't real if I knew where he was hiding. Anyway, the party was probably overstaying its welcome in a house that wasn't even mine to be hosting a party in. However, all the guests were still there, with the alcohol starting to take its effect. I was sat on the sofa with three friends. My friend to the right was well known for not being able to hold his drink. Maybe two cans of light beer, and he was already flaking. This night was a little different, however. Not in the sense that he hadn't already started to flake, because he definitely had. But he'd lapsed into some sort of semi-slumber next to me. Out of nowhere, during a lull in conversation and laughter, he made a grunting noise. Worrying that he was more drunk than we first realised, we shook him awake. And he wasn't happy with us, waking him up. But other than bleary eyes and a headache probably already starting, he was fine. He closed his eyes and slipped back off, and once again a grunt came from him, followed by a guttural sort of noise from his throat. Again I turned to him and shook his shoulder, calling his name, but he didn't wake up, though his eyes did open. His eyelids opened up enough for us to see the whites of his eyes. Then, through a croaky voice, we heard him calling my name. "Mr. E," he said. "Mr. E, come down the garden." At this point, all drinking, all laughter, all hope he was just drunk and sleepy left everyone's mind. I asked him what he meant by what he just said. No answer. Another friend leant over and gave him a gentle slap on the cheek. And he woke. "Shit, man, are you all right?" He replied with a, "Yeah," with an obvious question mark at the end of it. He didn't notice what he'd just been saying. With that, the slapper took his seat again, and the sleepy drunk friend settled back to his seat. No sooner than he closed his eyes again, they once again opened, just enough to see the whites of his eyes. The guttural noise once again emanated from him, and he started speaking again.
"Mr. E, come and find me in the garden."
I pushed down the fear, and I asked him why. "What's down the garden?" But there was a long pause.
"Mr. E, come down the garden. Come and find me, Mr. E. Find me."
To say there was something sinister about this situation would be an understatement. Something sinister in the way my friend simply couldn't drop off into a peaceful, drunken slumber. Something wicked in the noises he was making. The whole feel of the room shifted. Whatever he was doing, whether it was paranormal or not, demanded attention. And a sort of morbid fascination took a grip of all of us. It was like being dropped into a cheap scene of a very cheap horror film. With that, I shot up from my seat and I screamed his name. His eyes flew open, fully. He looked bewildered and slightly scared. I told him it was time for him to go home. He was far too drunk. As you can imagine, this was a real bummer on the already waning atmosphere. Most of my friends started to make their way home, and I can't say I blame them. Even the one friend that was meant to be staying at my house, because his place was a very long walk away, made an excuse and left. I was left in the early hours of the morning, cleaning up after a party with every single light on, shooting furtive glances out of each and every window I passed, hoping not to see the beckoning thing that had used my friend as a vessel. Because I should point out at this stage that none of my friends ever knew about the ridiculous game me and my dad played when I was younger. Something wanted me to walk through the entangled web of brambles and age-old fruit trees in the dead of night. And it was using my fond memories as a lure. I know for sure that whatever wanted me alone and vulnerable in the depths of a dark, nearly 200-year-old garden was not my father. He had a wicked sense of humour, but he wasn't wicked. Was this beckoner, that shadowy thing that once stood at my bedroom door? Was it the Victorian boy that had waited so patiently for my eyes to connect to his? Was it something that used to call me through the house? Honestly, I'm not sure. And the thought of finding out scares me more than the actual events and occasions I believe I witnessed the veil between what we know and what we don't shifting. I'm much older now, and by my own estimation, I'm far less receptive to those things. I've spent too long fighting life and its many struggles. I've spent too long in professional kitchens where fact is fact and there is no room for grey areas. Things run like military precision. And there is a comfort in that, especially when you know for sure you've lived the what if, the was that real, the am I losing my mind? Still though, if I catch something from the corner of my eye, if I hear my name whispered in the moments before sleep, if I catch a whiff of perfume when no one's around, or if my dogs stare at an open, empty doorway, I still can't help my irrational mind pressing that alarm button before the larger rational part can pick through the information and come up with a rational solution. Thank you. I hope you enjoyed reading this, at the very least. Mr. E. Well, Mr. E, thank you for giving us our fourth episode of Season 21. Now, I loved your experience, because it's one of only very few experiences on the main feed that has a series of questions that will never be answered. Normally, they're the sort of experiences that do come out on Dark Bites because they're shorter experiences that don't really have anything to tie everything together. It's very rare to receive something in the long form, such as your experience, where those questions still arise. I also love how it appears across your whole experience, even from a youth, how you allow rational thought to enter the dialogue of witnessing something paranormal. Although I do genuinely believe what you experienced in every case was something paranormal. And I love including experiences like yours within each series, ones which aren't necessarily filled with jump scares, etc., ones which give you food for paranormal thought. And this one certainly fulfilled that request. So thank you ever so much, Mr. Ree. Don't forget, guys, if you've got your own experience, head to our website, thedarkparanormal.com, and click on Submit My Experience, or click the link in the show notes. And so, until next week, remember, whenever you discuss the paranormal, always try to leave some of your disbelief at the door. And I'll see you next time, right here, on The Dark Paranormal.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.